Hello, listeners. This is Darren, and welcome to another episode of The Criterionist. Look at the Criterion Collection one spine number at a time. This is episode 38, so I'm going to be talking about spine number 38, and that is Sazun Suzuki's Branded to Kill. So just so you know. This is a spoiler-filled podcast. I will be spoiling this film left and right, so just listen with caution or go watch the film. In this case, you probably should, because this film, I'll say it right now, this film is amazing. I absolutely loved watching this, every second of it. But yeah, let's get into the plot a little bit. So this taxi driver picks up Goro, and Goro, he's the third ranked hitman in all the whole country. I assume it's Japan. And the taxi driver's kind of trying to hire Goro, and his wife's in the taxi too. But he's gonna hire Goro to protect this guy. I think it's kind of hard to follow, but that's not really the point of the film. This filmmaker, with this one and next episode, Tokyo Drifter, he does not care about plot and consistency in plot. He just kind of cares about making good movies, which is, you know, a good thing. So there's this whole ambush during this like, when he's trying to protect this guy. I don't even know who. But of course, being the third-ranked hitman, Goro gets out of it fine. So then they hit another ambush. I think the taxi driver just dies. He doesn't make it through that ambush. But in the next one, there's like a sniper in a building in the middle of nowhere. So Goro like sneaks up on him, pours gasoline into the window, and then sets it on fire, in which the gunman, the attacker, runs out on fire to the person they're trying to protect, and then Goro shoots him down before he reaches him. Very cool, very weird and crazy. And a lot of weird cuts in this film. Just cuts to different scenes, and cuts from scenes. Like, you don't really know how much time has passed. You don't know where we are in the story. So from that point on, we figure he like delivers the guy to safety, and then all of a sudden we see him in a broken down car being picked up by a random lady. So yeah, it's not very connective, but yeah, this lady, Mizako, she'll come up later, but she's a weirdo. She says she wishes she was dead at one point. She has a dead bird as one of those car fresheners. It's not a car freshener, obviously, but that's where it is on the dashboard there. And he gets home after, you know, a long night of work, and starts smelling cooked rice. Like, there's this rice cooking in this, like, crock pot thing. And, then starts having lots and lots of sex with his wife. And it's a pretty funny scene, because they keep showing the bed, which is perfectly made, and no one is in it. But then it, like, pans over to him and his wife having sex. It's very strange, very funny. And a little odd. But then he does some more work, some more shootings, and goes home. His wife, like, says something to him, and then he hits her, smacks her to the ground. It's just a weird shift. This is like 10 minutes of the movie where he has all that sex and then comes back after work and then smacks her. It's just a crazy tonal shift. Definitely what the movie is, just crazy tonal shifts all over the place. But yeah, then you're like, wait, this guy was a weirdo, and now he's just a jerk, and I don't know what to think. But so the girl, he sees her again, or she finds him, I can't remember, but then she's going to hire him to kill somebody, maybe her husband, I am not sure, but he's ready to snipe, and a butterfly gets in the way, and he shoots an innocent woman, and then this is when he realizes he's not going to make it. He's going to be killed for his mistake. He's no longer ranked, I think, is what comes up. But he's still so calm and cool. He's kind of like James Bond, or he's even more calm than James Bond. Never really worries through the first half of the film. Even when he says, oh yeah, they're going to kill me, I don't know when. But he's just standing there smoking a cigarette, leaning on a wall. Yeah, super cool, super calm. Then he goes home and his wife shoots him, but for some reason his giant belt buckle saves him from dying. She runs off. So, with nowhere to go, he goes to Mizako's house, and she's crazy. She's got a butterfly collection, but instead of being behind glass and being about, like, I don't know, 20, 30 butterflies, they're just hundreds of butterflies all around, which is, you know, some symbolism, because a butterfly got in the way, and he killed the wrong person, maybe because we kind of feel this attraction that he has for her. So maybe this butterflies means they're getting in the way of his true love, even though his wife just tried to kill him. Again, she has a death wish. She wants to be killed. She kind of asks him to do it, but he can't. Again, I think he admits he loves her at some point. Even obviously in real life, in reality, he wouldn't feel that way. But in this movie, it works. You feel that he cares a lot for this person just because of the odd style and the fact that she's so weird. I don't know. It works very well. So he can't kill her, though. He's about to, I think. But he leaves, gets drunk, passes out, and then he goes to the guy he's working for, I think. And that's where he finds his wife, and you realize she's been cheating, or she left him for this guy. And so he doesn't respond. That's another weird scene. She, like, keeps talking, and he just kind of is staring, like, not straight ahead, just staring down, just still keeping his cool, it seems like. And then he shoots her, and then shoots her lots of times. He's angry. You can tell he's angry. He is going to leave, and the boss just falls. Like, he's standing backwards with his back to us, and he just falls, and there's a hole in his head. So you realize he's been shot. By who, we don't know. So he runs to Mizaku's, and she's gone. There's this weird, like, tape, like this film reel that's been being played, and you can tell she's been kidnapped. I don't really know what this reveals, but the character is pretty upset, and he does not know what to do. He gets this call from the number one ranked hitman, and he's gonna meet him at a pier, I think, but I'm not sure how that really plays out. Again, hard to follow, but still very enjoyable. So there's this crazy pier shootout. He kills everyone. You think he's won, really, and then number one pulls up, and says, "Come with me." So you just realize that that was just a test to see if he can do it. Then Goro is like dropped off and then is just feels paranoia for himself. There's this weird scene where they, number one picks him up again and they go to a restaurant, but then number one, kind of disappears and you don't know where he's gone. Then this whole thing ends in a boxing ring and, they kill each other. And then, right before it feels like Goro is about to die, I think, right before he walks, before he dies, Mazako walks in and he shoots her out of the paranoia he feels, and then the movie ends. So yeah, that's Branded to Kill. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, let's get into the themes of the film. Not much going on here. It's kind of a film about what being a killer does to you. This guy is number three killer of all time, which means he's done it a lot. I don't know, he's so cool when he does it. He's so calm when he does it. There's this whole scene where he just kind of shoots. He's like at a billboard or something, and he opens. It's, again, this film is so cool. He opens the lighter part of a billboard and shoots his gun through there in a train station. And then the guy lets the guy fall in a way to where he's under the train station and won't be found, or he'll be like run over or something. so there's that. But since he's so calm, he must have all this built inside of him, which he gets rid of through having lots of sex with his wife and then smacking her. And then all of it kind of, when he kills his wife for betraying him, trying to kill him, he kind of lets it all out at that point. That's when he gets very paranoid and loses his game a little bit. Definitely becomes just super paranoid and can't focus, it seems, especially when number one comes and a very intimidating person intimidates him. Yeah, from there on, he's off his game after he kind of lets go of all his anger and his troubles. He falls in love with this girl and he can't kill her. It seems he doesn't want to just have sex with her like he did with his wife. So he can't let go with her. He can't get rid of his stress with her because it seems like he actually cares for her. And that's when he loses his game still. So yeah, I guess it's about the troubles of being a hitman, which there would be a lot, and this explores it pretty well. Yeah, I don't see a lot of more themes in the film. I just see coolness and awesomeness. So yeah, let's just get into what I thought about it. I thought this film was absolutely amazing. Definitely one of my favorites that I've watched so far out of the 38 that I've seen. This one's definitely one of the best. Can't be beat. That's not true, but it's up there for sure. I don't even know how to explain how cool it is. I don't know how to get across how amazing I thought this was. Yeah, just very stylized. Very, very quick editing, very, what seems to be bad editing, like, oh, you forgot to tell us this detail, but it's very intentional. You just feel like the director, sorry, was just like, okay, let's just leave that out, because he's kind of going off James Bond, but he's really going off film noir, which never really made sense. Never really wanted you to follow along. It just wanted you to feel a certain way. That was definitely the cool kind of movie back then. I feel like still cool today. I enjoy those. Just this weird, usually just a weird detective guy, tough as nails, but still very flawed. And he just going around and bad things keep happening. This one has more of a just a gangster feel instead, which other film noirs did. What am I saying? But this one just so much weirder and cool. There's like shots of like fire in the background that just seem to pop up, and instead of like an actual fire forming, it just the wife, after she shoots the husband, just apparently starts a fire, but the fire just happens everywhere, which seems intentionally put there to just be stylized. And yeah, just the fire in the one house where the guy is running out, that is just so cool looking, and it's very awesome. And now I'm just rambling, so I think I'm gonna call it good. All I'm gonna say is just go watch this film. I absolutely loved it. I can't quite explain why, but I think that is part of the film's appeal for me. Is just I can't really explain what is happening or what's going on in the filmmaker's mind to make him make the choices he does. So definitely, yeah, go check this out. And you can follow me on Twitter at The Criterionist. Go read my movie review blog, schmuckforlife.wordpress.com. Go listen to my other podcast, The Rosebuds. You can find that on iTunes as well as this podcast. Go subscribe to both of them if you feel like. Leave them some reviews, good or bad. If you want to leave some feedback, that you don't want to put in the review, just email me at darincriterion14@yahoo.com. That's D-A-R-I-N, criterion, number 4@yahoo.com. Yeah, next time I'll be doing Tokyo Drifter, which is another Suzuki film, and yeah, can't wait to see that one, see how that turns out. Thanks for listening. Have a good night, or day, or afternoon. Bye.